Okay, hello everyone. It's Nathan here for the Inner Circle call. Today is the second Wednesday. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Today's the fourth. I don't know what day it is. Today's the fourth Wednesday of the month, and this is the seller and buyer call. This is where we break down any type of conversations that you're having with your sellers or your buyers, and you want to learn how to handle the conversation, different hurdles or challenges someone has brought up, stuff like that. Now, I will say this. I always usually like to open up with a short story, but one of the things is I need to know as soon as I open up the lines here if you can hear me clearly, because I'm literally right by the water. So I don't know if there's any wind turbulence coming through or if you just hear the lake in the background. So why am I at the lake? So I'm expanding my short-term and long-term rental business into a different market outside of the main city. I'm doing it more next to Lake Victoria and expanding the market that way. So I'm literally right next to the lake today. So let me know later if this if you can hear me or not, or if you hear the ocean in the background. Ocean, excuse me, the lake. Did you know that Lake Victoria is the second largest lake in the world? There you go. Wanted to open up today's call with a little information that's coming. It's a little technology. Doesn't have so much to do with buyers and sellers at this point. But it's a little technology shift that's coming into the marketplace through two applications, two mainly Google Maps. The other one would be Apple Maps. Apple Maps is growing in it's definitely growing in the way of utility. However, Google Maps tends to be the number one source that a lot of people go and use to, especially in the real estate industry. So one of the things that's happening in regards to real estate for us with Google Maps is like you can actually, they call it 3D imaging or 4D imaging. Another term that's being used for it is interior photos. Interior walkthroughs. So what they're doing now is they're testing in very large buildings like shopping malls, any type of commercial building, not private homes, obviously, but in commercial buildings, that's pretty much the average buildings that people go into. It could be a Walmart or any other type of building. What they're doing is they're actually allowing people to enter a building through Google Maps and actually be able to walk different levels into that building. So if you were, let's say, if you were in a shopping mall that was like five stories deep, like had five levels, you would be able to actually walk through every level of that shopping mall, okay? If you were on, let's say, a ground level, no-storied building, and you were going to walk into a, let's just say, nail salon, okay? Instead of looking at pictures, you would actually be able to walk into the building through Google Maps, walk as if you were walking to the back of the building, and then spin around and then walk out. So kind of imagine everything with Google Maps that it does with, like, street view into building view. That's the new word they're using, is building view. This is also known as interior photos, 360 photos. Also, 3D imaging. So basically, they're calling it building view, and you can be able to see multiple, entry points and levels within the building. So really cool feature. That's actually it's already out. It's already out there. It's just not, it's not in every building yet. So I don't want to say they're rolling it out because it's already in use, but they are rolling it out. So this is actually really helpful if you're, purchasing property maybe in a nearby area, maybe you're doing investing virtually. Like, this really helps me is if you're investing virtually and you really want to scout the area, then you can do that through Google Maps. For example, today, like I just said in the beginning of this call, I'm doing a lot of the stuff I'm doing. I'm scouting out this area near the lake. Well, because there's not Google Images so well, it just doesn't pick up every location and deep us the access roads, not the main roads, but off the main road. So I actually have to physically come to the location because we're expanding in that area. I have to go walk around the area. So it depends on how you're building your business. So for this time, I have to actually come out to the area to make that happen. So wanted to share that with you guys. Hopefully, you know, you can actually use this feature already. You can go into any, pretty much any major city and start using this building view feature. It just happens automatically as you go check out any big, you know, sometimes even public buildings. All right. So with that being said, this is the buyer and seller call. If you have had any situations or success stories, conversations that you've had with buyers or sellers recently that maybe went really well or maybe didn't go so well, here's the place to share that so we can go over it and have new ideas and new solutions to the challenges. All right? So with that being said, feel free to jump in. Anyone who wants to go first, just jump right in there and let me know what your question is and what you have. And also, let me know if you can hear the water, if the water in the background is a bit annoying.
Hi, Nathan. This is Cheryl from St. Louis. Russ is at work.
Hey, Cheryl. How are you today?
I'm well. The call sounds clear, so no annoying
great.
Sounds behind you. I wanted to update you because I went over a deal with you last on the 8th of August, and
yep.
It was a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1,700 square foot house that was in really good condition. I did do the walkthrough, and it didn't really need any repairs, but there was, updates that would have improved the house. The buyer wanted $113,000, but he was willing to go as low as $100,000. Well, that price still wouldn't allow us to do updates, and you suggested offering around 80%, and if he would do it for terms, go with about $100,000. So I went and looked at the house, explained to him that there was two different ways I could buy the house, either with cash or with a lease option, and I made him an offer under both conditions. What we ended up agreeing on, I have it under contract, is a 3-year lease option where we're going to pay him $113,000 at the end of the 3 years, and we're going to pay him $700 a month, which would include the taxes and insurance. And by the rent-a-meter, we should be able to get easily $1,100 for the rent. So we'll be getting about $400 monthly cash flow. And at the end, we believe we're going to be able to, well, when we put a lease option person in the house, we're going to get them under contract for $145,000. So we'll be making $32,000 cash no matter when they get their mortgage and cash out. And until that point, they'll be bringing in $400 a month. So
Fantastic.
Thank you for your advice on that. I just wanted to let you know that it did work out. And,
That's awesome. I'm so happy to hear that. And you know what? You went into that deal. I remember we had this conversation about just being maybe a little bit more creative and changing up a few things. That's fantastic. I'm so excited for you guys. Now, what I would recommend is, like you said, if you're at a 3-year term right now with the homeowner, but if you want them to go and if you want them to hustle on the purchase, you know, and do it a 2-year and or maybe a 1-year, however you want to structure it with the home buyer, that'd be fantastic. That's a great day right there.
That's exactly true. You know, we push for somebody to qualify for a mortgage in 1 year. We don't like to do the whole 3-year term because anything can happen in that much time.
Right.
You know, we just presented it to Charles, the homeowner, as, well, we're going to be paying you $13,000 more than we would have gave you cash. And if they do go for the maximum 3 years, that would mean you would be getting $18,000 more. And he was cool with that, of course. So he's not in any hurry.
Right. And you know what? Sure, I want to bring up an important part that you just said, and that is you sold the deal as in what is he, the seller, gaining, right? That's how you sold it, and that's great. And that shows him the benefit of the deal rather than saying, hey, this is what we need, you know, or some other scenario. You could have said it any other way. But you brought the benefit to him, and that's really powerful. I wanted to point that out.
Yes, and I agree that did sell it because he was going to be making more cash even now than if he was renting it on his own, because we'll be taking care of the property and he won't be responsible for it in any way. We usually do pay the insurance and taxes, but since he owned the house free and clear, and I felt trust with him, he's just going to show us receipts to prove that he's paying the taxes and insurance. So,
wow.
So basically, he is making more on the house, so it's advantageous for him. But, you know, we'll be walking away with $32,000 at the end plus monthly cash flow. So
that's great. Wow, good for you. And I got a question that I know is not just – I already probably know the answer, but I'd love for you to share with everyone else. How did you acquire the property? Like, what was the lead source? How did you find this deal? That kind of stuff.
We primarily find our leads doing postcards, and we mail out about 1,000 a week, and we get quite a few calls back. And he'd had the postcard for 3 weeks and then finally called. So we do have a few other ways to get calls, but our best source is by mailing postcards, and we use Click to Mail, and we have them printed. We put our own list in, and we have them printed and mail out once a week.
That's great. Wow, that's great.
But thank you for your advice and everything.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely. And I think what a lot of people are just seeing right now, and this is a great example for everyone to listen into, because right now, because the market is so hot in the primary markets, even in the secondary markets, we're seeing an increase of, you know, where the seller just doesn't want to budge so much. You know, they want to get top dollar right now. And that's just the way the market is. And what we have to do as investors, we have to go in a little bit more with creativity, right? It forces us to become a little bit more creative right now with deals than just cut and dry solid numbers. Now, it's fine and easy to do in a very, let's call it a down market, or the market's correcting itself, or a crash, or the bubble bursts, all that kind of stuff. When the market is going down and everyone is like in the panic mode, just trying to, we're super motivated, let's put it that way, they're super motivated. Yeah, you could just go, and then you're trying to get from your starting point, general rule of thumb is 70% if you're doing, you know, basically the 70% rule. And then you work down from there, right? So that's really common. It's a good rule of thumb. In these times, we have to be a little bit more creative. We have to come up a little bit higher in our numbers, lock up the property, and have a little bit of an education session with the seller, okay? Education session being seller, your property is not exactly what you think it's worth, right? Let me tell you why. This needs work, that rehab needs to be done, so on and so forth. So we need to kind of educate them, even if it's to the point where did you get your number? Where did you come up with this sale price? And sometimes they literally just think, well, my neighbor down the street, and they go off the neighbor down the street. Sometimes they do a little research themselves, and they look online, Maybe they pulled up Zillow's estimate. And we all know how Zillow's estimate can sometimes be way off, right? It can be really high, and that's all they go off of. So, or for example, sometimes they go off assessed value, tax assessor's value. And that number might not even be right most of the time. So we have to do a little bit more educating right now because people are a little bit more stuck in their way of selling and the mindset. So we do have to get a little creative. And not only just creative in the what percentage we go in on the deal, but also on the exit, right? What meaning it may not be a wholesale deal right off the top. You may have to do a lease purchase with someone. You may have to do a sandwich lease, a wraparound mortgage with someone in these kind of times. It's just a matter of being creative. It may be like, for example, a seller is free and clear and they hold the mortgage, right? It could be all kinds of scenarios, but we just have to be a little bit more creative. And Cheryl, I thank you so much for sharing that. That's your perfect example of what everything I just mentioned about being creative right now is really what it's about. So I'm happy for you guys.
Thank you.
Great. And I'm sure, Cheryl, I'm sure you have a bunch of more leads that you've been, that maybe, are there more leads that you have that you can circle back around to and present different offers or even follow up with, even just do a follow up?
There are several houses that I have right now that I need to do callbacks on to try to see, because the people want too much money for the property, but the property needs work. And so I'm going to go back to them, and we kind of specialize in the lease option, but they haven't been working out too well because everybody wants to sell fast in the hot market and not,
right,
you know, have a hold on them. But I'm going to circle back around to a couple other properties that we have that people aren't moving to see if they'd be, you present it as you won't have responsibility for the property anymore. We'll take care of everything. And,
right,
you know, but you have to wait for the payout. So,
right.
So hoping that those will come through. But thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to reiterate that part, you know, the seller waiting for the payout, there are people who are there willing to do that. Sometimes a lot of people think like, oh, the seller won't go for that. Don't they want their money? Not all the time. I can't even say not all the time. You never know. You never know until you ask. You never know until you find out. I wish we all had a crystal real estate ball that we could tap onto and say, oh, this is going to happen. But you won't know unless you ask. And if you don't present the offer with multiple options to say, hey, you know, maybe we can try this or try that, you never know if the seller might be willing. And that happens quite often. Otherwise, we wouldn't have sandwich lease options and lease options. So, yeah, great
stuff.
Great.
Sometimes people are pretty savvy about capital gains, and if they've had a big income year and they don't necessarily want to sell a property in the same year and have to pay all the capital gains.
Right. Very true. Very true, because even now we're seeing, maybe since the beginning of the year, even into 2017. So 2017, 2018, people's incomes have increased, right? And we're seeing the economy grow. There's a lot more job growth. So this is also a time, remember back, 10 years ago, right? Remember when people had second homes or vacation homes, right? People had another home and a vacation home, right? And maybe they picked up a rental property. That's when the market's good. People start making those decisions. Or they were living in a home, and then they want to build their own house. So they're buying land, and then they're building their own home. That's when the market is really good, and people are positive, and more money's coming in. So, Cheryl, you're absolutely right. Sometimes people don't want to pay those capital gains tax. They have the funds. It's not like it's going to break the bank or anything. So they don't sell it right away, and they defer the tax hit on it. So, absolutely.
I have a question. So in this case, for the offer to be accepted, was it almost at the market value? I just want to know a little bit more about this deal, like the offer. Was it at 100%? or it was like 80%. I mean, I just want to know.
Yeah, Cheryl.
We have done lease options where we've almost paid market value, but that was because people were underwater on their mortgages. Right now, Charles's house, the owner, he owned it free and clear, and when somebody owns it free and clear, they're usually accepting of less than market value. The market value on that house with the current, it needed updates, but it was clean and in good condition. There was another house like it that was sold this year for $137,000. And so because we're doing the lease option and we're going to help somebody get mortgage ready, we're going to put it up for sale for $145,000. We probably could push it and go a little bit higher, but the problem is if a bank was going to give the people a mortgage in 1 year, the house probably wouldn't comp out for higher than $145,000. So you don't want to get crazy and ask too much.
Right, right.
And then how much did you offer? Was it
137
was, 113. So you get about, 90% of the market?
It wasn't 90%. You know, it's, 100.
That's more around.
Yeah.
It's about 80%, yeah.
Oh, about 80%. And how about, how do you deal with do you have a lawyer that do the sandwich lease for you, or, I mean, how does that work?
It's not going to be a sandwich lease. What we're going to do is we're leasing the property from the owner for 3 years, and then we sublease to the new tenant with the option to buy. We do have those contracts signed with an attorney because that pushes the new tenant into the stronger idea that this is a big obligation. You are not renting this property, you're leasing it to own, you know, and that you're responsible for it.
Oh, okay.
And to add to that, I would recommend anytime you're dealing with any lease agreement, I would highly recommend that you could do one of two things, okay? Number one is get with an attorney in that state that you're closing the deal in, okay, so that they know the laws in that state. Now, there's another source that's come out recently in regards to lease agreements and contracts is Bigger Pockets has also a new resource where they have lease agreements for landlords or people who are doing lease options on their website as well. And that's state specific. Okay, so primary number one, just get with an attorney and have them draft the contract. If you want to look at a different option, you know, maybe you're comfortable writing up your own agreement, you can check out what Bigger Pockets has available as well.
So in this case, when you negotiate for this lease option, so the seller already know that you are going to sublease, right? I mean, it was already agreed, correct?
That's correct. We let him know that we'll be putting a tenant in, but that we're also responsible for the property. And that's part of what they like is that, you know, we're going to make sure things get done and he doesn't have to be responsible anymore. And just so you know, we use a real estate attorney, not a general attorney.
That's very right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, the owner will have to prove to you that he paid the mortgage every month. How does it work to make sure that this? Oh, I'm sorry. Is this free and clear? This house.
It's free and clear. Yeah.
Oh,
it's free
okay.
And clear.
But yeah. If the other properties we've had, we get a release signed so that we have access to the mortgage company information from the owner, and we pay the mortgage I would not trust the owner of the property to pay the mortgage. The only thing we trusted Charles to do this time is to pay the taxes and insurance. And because he pays them once a year, if he doesn't, that's in the contract, and he has to show me within 2 weeks of 31 December that he's paid them, or I'll go after him.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's a little different. We make the tenant direct deposit into our bank account, and then we direct deposit into the mortgage company to make the payments on the property. Because one of the reasons you want to do that is because then you have a payment history that helps the new tenant qualify for their mortgage. Because they're showing a history of proper payments.
Okay, so that shows the rent history, right? Correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And one thing you might do when you're doing lease options is we never call it rent. We call it a payment because people always call and say they want to rent the property, and we always tell them that it's a payment on the property. Mm-hmm. We don't let them pay down. It's rent in
principal.
A sense. Yeah,
sure.
Rent in the sense that they're not paying down how much they owe on the house until they get the mortgage, but we don't call it rent to them because we don't want them to get the idea they're renting the property and then they can leave. And we also take a really big deposit, so if they leave, we would have thousands of dollars to maintain the property and make the monthly payment on it in order to get a new tenant in.
A new tenant in. Now, I do want to jump in here and interject for a minute. Cheryl, you bring up some great points. I want to interject, kind of recap everything you mentioned, because there are a few different scenarios in everything you just mentioned. For example, in this case, Cheryl did not have the monthly payment from the tenant go towards principal of the mortgage down the road, which is totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And I love the way you guys position that, Cheryl, because you're saying this is a payment. You're going to own this property one day. You're not just a renter. This is going to be yours. And the option consideration money, the option money, that lump sum of money that they paid upon walking into the property, that is now their heart into the deal. It's like they're skin in the game for that future, ownership of that deal. So there is a different scenario, which some people do, is they'll take a portion of the monthly payment and they'll shift that, let's say $100 is typically the number. They'll take $100 of that monthly payment and put it towards principal. So at the end of the term, whether it's 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years, whatever that term is, they will deduct all those $100 payments off the purchase price of the property. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But in this case, it's different. Okay.
It's just a way to structure it. Yeah, it's just a different structure. That's all. Yeah.
It actually can get really complicated depending on how you structure things. Try to be as simple as possible. But the other thing that, like Nathan was mentioning, is you really want the person to have incentive. And so that deposit they make is non-refundable. So they're sort of locked in, and they don't get it back if they leave. But if they go through and get their mortgage, we use that money as their down payment towards getting the mortgage. Great. So, that's very much incentive for them to go through.
Right.
Okay, so the down payment of the option, okay, the option will be the down payment. So, okay, so how do you show the history? If history is just, I mean, So when that person gets the mortgage, like a year afterwards, how does it work to help them get the credit? I mean, the history.
You just put it on the HUD statement.
Oh, saying
yeah,
that they.
Let me just add to that, because what Cheryl's saying is correct. They'll put it on the HUD statement that they've been making those payments. What you can also do is, depending on how they're tracking the payments, whether it's through a collection company or whoever, or if you're doing it personally, you can actually just take the rent roll. That's called the rent roll. You can take the 12 months or 24 months of payments, okay, and you can present that to the bank for them. You can actually just print it out as – you can do a PDF for them, and they can take that all those rent roll payments to the bank. So when they go qualify – the bank will see that, oh, okay, they made payments for the past 12 or 24 months, however long they've been in the property.
Oh, okay, so in this case, so this was done, like, without third-party verification, right? So you take the money, not the third-party, because I know there's a third-party that takes the payment from the subleaser and then mortgage. But in this case, it's all done by you. You're not dealing with a third person to track all the payments, right?
Correct. I'm doing that monitoring. If you're not good with math, you don't want to do it yourself. You know, you just have to monitor all that, and then you can present that information to the title company, you know, as part of the closing package, like Nathan said.
Okay, so in this case, when you negotiate with the owner, for example, if they owe money, so they need to sign a authorization to release information. So in this case, they will have to disclose this Social Security number. Is that correct?
Well, they show us a bank statement so that we can access, and also the online banking so that we know how much they owe. And then we put how much we're paying for the house in the contract, and then part of the contract also agrees to pay the house off. So when we close with the title company at the end, the main part of the money is going to end up paying the bank back, you know, for the house.
So how do you have access to the bank's information? So I don't understand, like, how able.
Okay, let me dive right in there. I'll answer that. There is a document that you sign, the tenant signs, to in this case Cheryl, right? So they sign what's called an authorization to release information. When Cheryl calls their bank or any third party, okay, to get information, Cheryl will have to submit this document, authorization to release information. That means that Cheryl now has the authority to get access to that information. That's called an authorization to release information document.
Okay, and typically this requires a Social Security number of the seller, right?
It can
or
have
not.
The social. It can.
Or
yes.
It doesn't have to. I don't know if sometimes some sellers don't want to give out that information. So is it possible to do it without that?
But I'll tell you what, here's the thing, and we're talking about the buyer here. Here's the thing, when they're buying a home, if anyone's going to go get a mortgage, if they're going to do a background check, all the social is required. In any type of financial transaction, whether it's real estate, a car, and any other thing, whether they're going to apply for a credit card at Best Buy, they're going to get their social. Yeah. So
no, but in this case, it will be the seller is different because he's selling. So he might not want to provide that information. You know,
same thing. It's still a financial. Yes, it's still a financial transaction. And if someone's going to get background information and verification, they would get an authorization release information. Some contracts I have seen socials on them. Some I haven't. It depends on the scenario.
Okay. So in this case, would the bank release information without the social of the seller? I don't know if that's the word that way.
Yeah, as long as – have you seen an authorization to release information contract yet?
Yes.
Have you ever seen one of those? Okay.
Of course.
Okay.
And that's why I know it has a social on it. Yeah.
Yeah, some do, some don't. Here's the thing. As long as the bank sees that document there, as long as they have a verification of signature, then they will release any information that's needed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm just afraid that the seller might not agree to, you know, give up, like, the social information. That's very confidential. I'm just like, I don't know if all the seller will agree to that. I was just wondering.
Yeah, again, in a seller situation, most of the time it's not going to be as needed. In a buyer situation, it is. Like I said, in some documents, you will have the social. And, you know, I don't know. As much as privacy is an issue, in the financial world, a social security number and a TIN number are numbers that are very regularly pushed around, like said verbally and all that stuff. It's a very common thing, especially if you're doing rentals. You know, it's just a very, it's a standard it's a standard thing. Yeah.
Well, actually, I did have one with one of the ladies. I was trying to do, like, seller financing for that one. And I did have the person fill out the authorization to release information, but it also required that the bank confirm. I was just wondering if I could just have something similar without the social, but have the bank confirm anyway. So I don't know. I mean, if I were the seller, I don't think I want to give out that information to the buyer. I'm just wondering, that's all.
Well, I don't know. It depends on the situation you're in. I can understand we're verbally talking about it right now, but if you're trying to sell a property and get it moved, I would say you're going to do whatever it takes. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I haven't run into any situations like this before. Like I have on the front end with a homeowner. Like, why do you need my social? Well, we run a background check. However, if you're dealing with someone who maybe is trying to sell a property or any kind of financial transaction, it's pretty standard. It's going to be pretty standard. Again, on the seller side, you're not going to see it so often. But if it comes up, then it shouldn't. I don't understand why it'd be an issue. If it's something that you need to explain, you can just kind of revert back to what I said about, hey, listen, this is a financial transaction. Typically, it's just commonplace where we get social security numbers.
Okay. So in this case, Cheryl pay how much for to the seller? Like $10,000? Sorry, I didn't remember. So how much?
Did Cheryl pay?
No cash up front. He's going to get a monthly payment of $500, plus he's going to pay. We're giving him $100 a month for insurance and $100 a month taxes. So we're paying him $700 a month, but we're going to rent it for at least $1,100. So we'll be getting $400, and he's going to be getting $500 cash flow monthly.
Wow, that's pretty good.
At the end, when we close, he'll get $113,000. And we'll be selling it for probably $145,000, and so we'll get $32,000 at the end.
But you have the three years lease option, right?
Correct, but that's max.
Okay, so zero down 3 years lease option will about $700 a month. And then how did you get the buyer? Was it on Craigslist? What was the marketing for that?
We are working on getting the buyer now. Predominantly, we do signs in the neighborhood, you know, like bandit signs, without the address, just saying lease to own, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1,700 square feet. And then we usually don't put a price. But because it would help build our buyers list for the area, but since this one, the rent is going to be $1,100, I shouldn't say rent, but the monthly payment, I'll probably put that on the sign because we get a lot of calls for people wanting to pay $400 a month, and I just don't have time right now to take hundreds of phone calls, so.
Yeah. Smart move. And just to add to that, just because I know this comes up quite often with yard signs, Most of the time, when it's the sign is real estate based, meaning lease to own, here's the price, 3-bed, 2-bath. When it's real estate based, those signs do not get pulled up by code enforcement. It's very rare. The type of signs that do get pulled up mostly are marketing signs. Okay, any kind of marketing, whether it's give us your diabetic strips for cash or we buy houses. It all depends on the area and all that. But yard signs that have real estate on it are not restricted to, or usually are not, oh, I forgot the word, but they don't, they're not under the category, let's say, of the law of code enforcement. Because whenever it's property, there's actually another code, it's typically around the country. Real estate signs are okay. That's normally, it's usually given. So I just want to make that clear to everyone listening.
So I just have one little bit more information about this house. So was this house ever, like, listed on the market before and they couldn't get the property sold? I just want to know what's going on with this one.
No, it was a rental property. The same family lived in it for 12 years. I sent out postcards to and the owner of the property got the postcard, and so he never had it listed. And, you know, he just knows that a house down the street sold for $113,000, and he knew that's how much he wanted for the house. And so, you know, basically I was hitting a list of non-owner occupied and you know, sent the postcard to the person paying the taxes on that property.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. That's wonderful. And the points that you get, I can get it from a BiggerPockets, or you need to make up your own, like, form?
Do not make up your own lease forms. Whatever you do, do not do that.
Okay.
And even if you have lease agreements from a home study course or some real estate program, do not use them. Here's what I recommend. Go first to a lawyer, have them draft the documents for that particular state, a real estate lawyer within that state that you're doing the deal. That is the best way to do it. The only reason why I mentioned BiggerPockets is because they actually had lawyers for every state. They had lease agreements and landlord, any contracts, rental agreements, lease agreements, for every state. They're state specific, and they're on BiggerPockets. So if you didn't want to use a lawyer, but you still wanted state specific contracts, which is very important, then you could use BiggerPockets. My first recommendation is go to a real estate lawyer.
Okay, so I can just go to the website and download for free, or I need to join?
No. I highly recommend you become a member. Everyone should become a member of BiggerPockets, regardless. Because BiggerPockets has a plethora of benefits, not only just connecting with other people. You can find cash buyers on there. You can find private money on there. You can post your deal on there for other investors if you want to sell your property to other investors. You can build a power team from there. Very, very powerful. Their podcasts are awesome. But they also have calculators in there. So I highly recommend it. But if you're just going to go on there and buy the contracts for that state, I believe they're $100. Or $97, something like that, per state. If you become a member, I believe it's a pro member, they include all the contracts in the membership. So it's a great resource.
How much do I have to pay as a pro member? Do you know?
Just go to biggerpockets.com for the pricing, and you'll see it. They vary. There's different prices.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been a great conversation. And you know, a lot. I know this... this is under the category of rent, short-term rentals, long-term rentals. This is, getting into a property with no money down, right? Again, no money down, real estate, right? This is a great example of that. And to add to that, when I just said in the beginning of the call, I'm over here outside of the capital. I'm outside of the capital. I'm in a different area next to Lake Victoria doing the same thing. I'm going into properties with no money. I'm not buying these properties. I'm actually just putting them under contract with the owner because the owner doesn't want the hassle. Right, and just subleasing the properties. See, these are just creative ways. And Cheryl and Russ have been doing real estate for a while, so they know of these creative ways. It's just a matter of thinking about these different ways of how can you monetize each deal, because sometimes you'll get a great deal from your postcards, from your yard sign, from a referral. You'll get a deal, and you, if it doesn't just meet one model of real estate, let's say it just doesn't work as a wholesale deal, well, then you got to think of other creative ways, because you have a motivated seller on your hands. You got to think of other creative ways that you can monetize the deal. So just keep that in mind. There's always, if you're doing marketing for off-market properties and working directly with homeowners, which is usually the best way to do real estate investing, working directly with homeowners, you got to be a bit more creative than just that, you know, one-stop shop. You got to be have a little bit, a few more options there. All right. So again, thank you guys for sharing. Very informative. I do want to open it up for anyone else who maybe have a different question or wants to add to the conversation that we just had. I wanted to open up the lines to anyone else who has questions. And while we're waiting for the questions to come in, just a reminder, if you do have any questions on this call that you want to shoot in an email instead of jumping on the call and voicing your question, what I'd recommend you do is go to Nathan@LarryGoins.com. Just shoot me an email, Nathan@LarryGoins.com, and I will get those questions answered for you as well. But I do encourage anyone who's listening all the time to, if you can, to get your question out there. No question's too small. No question's too large. No question is stupid. We're all learning and growing together, as I like to say. So, all right. Anyone who has another question, just jump on in there.
Nathan, this is Cheryl again. If you don't get another question, could you address the issue with screening a tenant? Because people don't always tell the truth on their applications to get property, and right. You want to make sure that they're going to qualify. So yep. If nobody else has a question, could you address that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll jump into that right now. I have to say property management and tenant screening has come a long way in the recent years, not only because data and has become more prevalent, where we have easier access to people's data these days, which is fantastic, and we also have very cool softwares and tools that can get that data for us. I do highly recommend that no matter how much is on the application, that you do a background check. There's a number of good companies out there. If you are looking for some suggestions, just shoot me an email, and I can put a few links in an email over to you and reply back if you're looking for some. But there's some great companies out there that you can go in and do it yourself. There's even companies that will do it for you, and they will handle the whole process. They'll do the whole tenant screening. That doesn't mean they have to market for the tenant buyer, okay, but they can handle the tenant screening part, okay? So there's all kinds of services for this. If you come across a tenant who lies on their document, okay, they lie, they put falsehoods and they over-exaggerate numbers on their on their application, okay? If they do that, and you find out otherwise, and this just brings me to a perfect example I just had recently with when I was doing the owner finance, and the new buyer didn't tell me he had a foreclosure. A great conversation. I mean, we were just chatting it up. He's an ex-military. He's a veteran, because I do help a lot of veterans get into homes. But he just didn't mention he had a recent foreclosure within the past 4 years, okay? And when I even asked him the question, I said, hey, did you go through any personal foreclosures, judgments? All he said was, no, I haven't. Well, when we pulled credit, there was a foreclosure on there. So when I had to call him back, and I said, John, because it was John, and I was like, John, I said, now, I could have sworn you said no when I said, did you have any judgments, liens, or anything like a foreclosure on your record, and you told me you didn't have any. And you know what he said? He said, you know what, man? I was taking a risk But I can't, since you found it, I don't know why he didn't tell me. It just boggled my mind. He's like, but since you found it, he's like, I just got to be honest with you. And I was like, wait a second. First you didn't tell me. Now you're asking for forgiveness. And he said, this is what happened. He said, I went to some banks. They found the foreclosure, and I couldn't get another mortgage. So that's why I went owner financing. And what happened was I was over in Iraq, and my ex-wife was handling all – well, she was supposedly handling all the bills, and she didn't. When I came back to a foreclosed house, and it's been about 4 years ago. I said, hey, man, if you told me that up front, I would have totally, like, respected that. You know, I would have just respected that, man. And he's like, I know, but listen, let me tell you why I didn't tell you. Man, my wife's about to have a baby in 6 months, and we are just in a really – our apartment, that landlord hasn't fixed the air conditioner in, like, 6 months, and we need a place. And so he goes on and on telling me his story. And interesting enough, this guy was willing – he actually already owned a house. He bought his mother-in-law a house that he owned free and clear, and she was paying him, like, $400 a month, which is, like, half the average rent in the area. And I confirmed that. I got the address, checked the deed and everything. And then he also told me that he wanted to pay the loan off in 5 years instead of pay the mortgage off in the regular 20-year loans that I typically do. And I said, why do you want to pay it off in 5 years? He's like, man, nothing wrong, nothing against you, man, but I don't like to have any mortgages. I really like to pay off my bills. So anyway, when we started working the numbers, we couldn't get him a 5-year mortgage because he couldn't afford the monthly payment, but we ended up doing a 7-year mortgage. So, and you know what? I put him in the house. Even though he had a foreclosure 4 years ago, I still put him in the house. That was my judgment call. And that was because we talked about it. He did have another asset in his name that we got involved in the deal. So we were secured, but interesting enough, even though he filled out the application, even though he didn't mention the foreclosure from the phone call we had, the foreclosure showed up in the credit report. So I share that story with you because sometimes you'll have good situations, bad situations. People will lie on their application, and you just have to address it straightforward. You don't have to be mean about it. You don't have to be tough, rude about it. You know, I wasn't rude to this guy at all. But I did call him on the carpet, and sometimes you have to do that, and sometimes you do have to make the decision and say, you know what, this isn't going to work. You know, sorry, this isn't going to work, right? So sometimes you have to, and I've had people do that before also when through applications where they didn't say anything, and they left it off, or they fudged the numbers, and when we verified numbers, it wasn't right. So that can happen. So just be mindful, and you never know, what can happen out of a situation, but just be mindful of that. There are, again, there are softwares, there are companies out there that you can get and pay for that kind of background check, but also you can also have a service companies do that entire process for you if you wanted to as well. So with that being said, hopefully that answers your question. And there you got a little story in the background with that as well.
Thank you.
Sure thing. All right. Do we have time for one more question, if there is any? Jump on the call, and let's get it answered. All right. This has been a great call, by the way. I appreciate everyone that has participated and everyone that's listening. Again, send me your questions if you have any, Nathan@LarryGoins.com. And also for the next call, which is the deal analysis call, and that is the second Wednesday of the month. Be prepared for that call. Get your questions written down. Share them here on the call as well. And that way we can get everybody learns that way as well. This is a great call, very unique call because it was I know a lot of people are not familiar always with these strategies of creative deal structuring. So great call, and I appreciate everyone for sharing. Listen, this is the middle of the week. It's not hump day. It's not that, right? It's let's get more done day, right? Let's go out there, make it happen. Do something that you've maybe never done in your business, or, you know, try to evaluate your business like, hey, from last Wednesday to this Wednesday, you know, what can I do better this week that I didn't do so well last week, right? So analyze your week. As you go into the weekend, go in strong so that you can say, you know what, this week I gave it 100%. I went 103%. I gave it my all. And do the best you can. All right? Any other questions you have, just shoot me an email, nathan@larrygoins.com, and have a wonderful week. Talk to you guys soon.
Thank you. Thank you.
No
Thank you, Nathan.
Sure thing. Okay.